You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome back to the Undercut Podcast. It's time to review the second Grand Prix and first sprint weekend of the year, the Chinese Grand Prix. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and joining me once more is none other than Mr. Timo Albus Daly. How are you?
A bit like last week, quite refreshed given the early starts, but satisfied overall. Good weekend of motorsport, so no complaints really. Yourself?
To start the awkward trend for this episode, I'm very much in agreeance with you. Remarkably refreshed after a fairly sort of busy weekend of motorsports. And enjoyed much of what I saw from Formula One, enjoyed a lot of what I saw from IndyCar, and ready to discuss things. So yeah, sort of already in agreeance, and I think that's going to be a pattern that carries on. Although we have someone who might disagree with us. We're joined by friend of the show, Inside F2's Jenny Craig. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm agreeing already. I really enjoyed this weekend. I think there's a few things that I'm trying to enjoy F1 and forget about the battery usage. And when you look at the wheel-to-wheel stuff, I loved this weekend. I'm trying to put the reasoning behind. I am a bit of a... I agree with Max Verstappen on a few things, but the wheel-to-wheel is great. It's good to see.
We've got cars that can follow through the turns and actually sort of have a protracted battle that lasts more than one lap before either engines give out or tyres give out, as it previously was. So we're sort of in a very interesting scenario of we've got what we wanted, but not quite how we wanted it, I think.
We're completing the Murray Walker quote, sort of catching up is one thing, passing in is another, and we finally got to the passing bit of it after 3-4 questionable years of we can follow and we can sometimes get past. Now we can get past.
Yeah, and we can get past. But for some reason, a lot of people seem very annoyed that we can now get past. But ho-hum, more to discuss as the year goes by. Importantly, there is less of the year to go by because we had the official announcement over the weekend that there will be no Bahrain or Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. There are no replacement rounds either. Early on, we had sort of theorised that maybe Imola and Portimao might be stepping in to fill the gaps, but obviously it's very last minute to try and put together a Grand Prix there. So we're just down to a 22-round season. And this is a big commercial hit to Formula One as well. This is a loss of £100 million, roughly, and just based entirely off of how much those nations are paying in hosting fees, which says a lot. On top of that, obviously, there's a few additional bits and pieces that F1 will make on top of it, so the full number could be higher still. This does, importantly, open up a four-week break between the 29th of March, which will be Suzuka, and the third round for Miami, or the fourth round, 3rd of May, sorry, the fourth round, which will be Miami. Could be worse. You could be Colton Herta trying to figure out Formula 2 and your next race being Monaco on the 7th of June. Tricky time if you're Formula 2 and all of a sudden you've done one round and now need to wait nearly, what, 2-3 months to do your next one?
Same for Formula 3. They're all very green and they have to go to Monaco next. If you think that's carnage normally, just you wait. You feel a little bit less sorry for F1 Academy. They at least get to do Canada before them, but they also miss a round that they were supposed to have in Jeddah. Not ideal. And interestingly, the wording of the announcement implied that they were going to be held at a later date, but I honestly don't know where they would do that, considering how stacked they already made the calendar. You either ignore a summer break, but going to Middle East in August seemed like a bad idea for the heat, if nothing else. And you can't really do what WEC have done, which is lock Qatar at the end of their calendar after Bahrain in December, hoping that things have calmed down by then, because they have such a sparse calendar anyway, because we're already theoretically going to Qatar and Abu Dhabi for a doubleheader finale as it is, and that's in the end of November, December, so there wouldn't be any time. So yes, it's just a contractual thing so they can minimise the financial loss. But also it just amuses everyone else who's thinking, where would you fit this into the calendar that is not awkward for everybody.
Second half of the year is flat out, really. As soon as you come back from summer break, it's almost sort of like triple header, triple header, triple header, triple header, with a gap in between. Like, where do you put them? And also, the issue is the air freight and everything that they have to move around. You've got to get that stuff there when you're doing a load of races through all the Americas or doing a load of races through all of Europe, and then ship everything all the
The
way over
closest one
there.
they have is Baku, and even that could be a little bit dicey depending on how things develop in the region. So there isn't really a natural opening for it. But again, like you say, it could be worse. You could be F2 and F3 going, what the heck do we do for the next 67 years?
Just Colt Mahurta going and doing like Oceania F4 or something just to pass the
No,
time.
that's finished for this year.
Oh,
He
yeah, of
can't even
course,
do
yeah.
that. He can go to the Indy 500, but he was already not in danger of not doing that anyway because there would have been time. So I don't know what he does, but there we go. We try and get an F2 reference in, Jenny, as you're here, but there's not much else we can say about it, unfortunately.
Oh, I think I personally am a bit used to the gaps anyway, because we normally have a big one around when they go to America. So, but it is horrible. Bahrain's always one of my favorites. So it's a big loss to the calendar. Jeddah was going quite well as well, but bigger, more important things, safety and everything. So it is a massive loss. I think I'm going to wake up for Monaco. Who's Colton Herta? But yeah, I
I think
couldn't
it might be the
imagine that
first
F.
time we watched the previously on Formula 2 because we'll need it at that point because it all been
Yeah.
so long since the last round. I
I
mean,
couldn't imagine the F3 cars around Monaco either. That's going to be
ooh, good
chaos.
fun.
I mean,
Yeah.
pessimistically, critically thinking, obviously it's not a scenario we want to be protracted for any longer, but the final two rounds of our season are being held in Qatar and Abu Dhabi. And at the moment,
Had this thought.
Abu Dhabi is currently being sort of under heavy bombardment. And I don't think Qatar is exactly safe from all of this at the moment.
Las Vegas would be the season finale then, in
Yeah.
theory, if they don't replace it, which for F1, box office, for everyone
Historic.
else, very interesting. And yeah, insert your conspiracy theories here.
Yeah, we go back to what, the 1982, 3, 4 seasons, which used to finish at Caesar's Palace. So, I mean,
Keke
historically
Rosberg.
accurate. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, with the only real piece of news from the weekend out of the way, we'll click through the sprint quickly because, of course, this sort of happened at very awkward times for people in the UK at the very least. Another Ferrari versus George Russell ding dong at the start. And then it was either a drive-by on battery down the back straight or use it to get close and dive into turn one. Looks very exciting and actually was quite a good race to enjoy and watch back. Kimi Antonelli showing that the Mercedes has more to it than just deployable grunt as well, able to work through the field off of a bad start, making overtakes, using it through the bends. And getting back up there, the Red Bull very clearly still a handful in both of its drivers' hands. And yeah, just Ferrari battling away. Lovely to see both sort of Charles and Lewis figuring out how they race each other as teammates and giving it a bit of side-to-side action. You sort of go, ooh, this is good. This is what we used to see with the Charles Leclerc Carlos Sainz days. And you're like, yeah, this is spicy. This
It's
is what we
what
want.
we got the tease of in Qatar 24 when Lewis was still at Mercedes, and we knew obviously he was going to Ferrari, and we saw a little bit of close racing between the two. We thought, oh, we'd like more of that, please. But then last year we obviously didn't get any of that, and now we're getting the goods, and it has been worth the wait.
Yeah, it's. I think there's. There was a. I think it's certainly a Twitter thing. There's been a lot of new fans. I say new fans, very new fans to the sport, going, "Oh my God, I can't believe like Charles Leclerc has no idea about leaving racing room. Look at how hard he races his teammates." I'm like, how long ago was it that we saw him and Carlos Sainz going like wheel to wheel through turn two at Monza and just like hanging it out around Curva Grande? And you're going, has it really been that long that we've got a new generation of fans in that we've lost the sacred texts of Monza 2023? Like, that's not
Have to
right.
do
Come on.
another introductory class to get everyone up to speed again.
Like, I know that we
I
like to
think
be, like beat on DTS fans, but come on. Come on.
when you've got two drivers like that, it's just so good to see. And I think we're seeing Hamilton in such a more comfortable place with the Ferrari, whereas last year him being so far off Leclerc was just pretty unbelievable for people that have followed F1 for so long. But watching them two, I'm happily going to have a ceiling for it.
And importantly, it seems like they can get the cars to last the entire Grand Prix, and that gets into sort of general race notes because obviously new season, new regulations. It's easy just to sort of give a quick brush over the Grand Prix as well, where things seem to stay spicier for longer. We had battles going on throughout the Grand Prix with no major issues between sort of the teams that are actually fighting it out. Teams are very much learning battery management and power usage through a Grand Prix, which is a really interesting way of looking at it. They've figured out how to find the energy on the circuit, deploy the energy on the circuit, find it again, and make it work a lot better. And the passes still do look a little bit artificial. The teams and drivers certainly are referring to it as a bit Mario Kart deploying the mushrooms.
I
But
do love that criticism, though, of the artificialness, because it again, you go for short memories. What was DRS?
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
If not artificial, it wasn't a case of, you know, we'll get up to the car behind and then overtake them. That's the problem we have in a series like F1 Academy, where you can get close, but you need a bit of something to help you overtake. Here's a thing to help you overtake. Oh no, we don't like that it's artificial. Make your mind up, which way do you want it? If you want a bit of both, IndyCar's your jam. You can overtake with push to pass, but you don't need it. You can just do it normally. But here, it's just artificial in a different way. And if anything, it's improving the racing. So I don't really get the criticism, especially when you look at the DRS from about 5 minutes ago that has been around for a long time. And then what was it? Hers and hers before that. We've had this sort of thing for a while. So for me, I just look at that argument and go, come on, at least make a better case for it. If you there's a lot you could be unhappy with. You know, Jenny's trying to ignore the battery. I respect that. I understand that. It's not my favorite thing either. At least you've got a solid argument there to make rather than whatever this is.
It's like the blue Smarties when they changed the E number that they could put in. It's still very artificial in its nature, but functionally it's still the same thing. It's still a blue Smartie at the end of the day. But it's
better than Crofty's analogy from Australia, so I'll let that one slide.
Thank you. That's an appropriate sweet shop analogy. But yeah, cars can follow. We've got aerodynamics that allow them to get close, go side by side a lot more easily. We're not getting this sort of sidewash or backwash off of the cars. That means you can't get close through a series of bends. Look at how many drivers in sort of high speed sections were able to follow. That lovely sort of weaving section that sort of joins sector one and sector two in China is great for proving that you can have cars that follow into it. The problem is the cars are a bit unstable on corner exit when they suddenly deploy all of their power, as Isaac Hadjar found out, much to his chagrin, very nicely saved by Ollie Bearman, though clearly going to the Franco Colapinto school of avoiding cars that are in the way. But it's just interesting to see that we've got these cars that you can actually race with a bit now, and it's nice, I think. Although strategy-wise, I think it was Jolyon Palmer across the weekend said that a lot of the teams now are able to very accurately predict when there's going to be a safety car, and it's basically the lifelong or the longevity of the Aston Martin. You can estimate roughly when it will go pop, go, there's the safety car, that's when we'll pit. And that's why I think so many of the teams are able to masterclass a double-stacked pit strategy of just going, wait for it, wait for it, wait for it, now, go. And yeah, I think it was only Max Verstappen really that got lost to that one. A rare fumble by Red Bull when it comes to the strategy. But everyone else was just like, wait for it, wait for it. He'll do something into turn one. And sure enough, Lance Stroll went bang and then they went quick. But yeah, it's interesting, the racing. And we'll dive into it with our team-by-team analysis. And we'll kick off with current Constructors' Champions Mercedes. Russell qualified second, would finish second. Antonelli would qualify first and finish first. Timo, I'll let you kick off.
We've had 782 drivers in F1 history, and Antonelli has just become the 116th to win a Grand Prix, and he did that just 4 days at the time, shy of when an Italian last won a Grand Prix, which was, of course, Fisichella in Malaysia back in 2006. So not a bad going for him. Also becomes the youngest pole sitter in history to upset Sebastian Vettel's weekend, obviously stealing his record from Monza back in 2008 when he drove for Toro Rosso. Yeah, pretty nice weekend for him, and I like that he's bounced back in this way. He seems to have very fitting yo-yo weekends at the moment from the two that we've seen. He makes it a little bit more difficult for himself than perhaps he ought to, but he shows that he can still deliver when it counts. I liked the fact that Toto and his dad both laid down his championship hopes because A, it's sensible, B, he's really young, and C, it takes the pressure off him. I love the team radio that Toto had at the end of the Grand Prix, where he was essentially saying what all of the detractors had said about Antonelli and how it's happened now sooner than he even thought it was going to, such as the skill and talent of the driver. I don't think he's going to win the championship this year, but he's going to keep Russell very honest, I think, as well as the Ferraris. He's going to play a significant part. You're already calling them Constructors' Champions. They very well might be, but they're not going to do it without him. And I like the fact that so far, at least, we can say two Grand Prix, two different winners. And Russell had enough time to try and chase him down and bring the gap down a bit, but not enough. And I like that Russell wasn't able to just go and catch him. Obviously, Russell did also get a win under his belt in the sprint, his first since Brazil 22. But aside from that, he was just busy with the Ferraris for a lot of the race, which I liked as well because it shows that, yeah, they're probably going to have a lot of the season their own way, but it's not going to be Red Bull 23-esque in the domination. We still stand somewhat of a chance at this point of the season, at the very least.
Yeah, they're
I
not gonna.
like how much.
No, go on.
Sorry, I like how much confidence it looks like it's given Kimi as well. I think we saw last year he is such a confidence-based driver. He gets himself into momentums, good and bad. And I am excited to watch what he'll do. And he's got his first win now. I do think it will be upwards for him. But it says a lot as well. He was in Formula Regional in 2023. Did 1 year in F2, then came straight up to F1, which is insane. He didn't even do F3, and he got put straight into a race-winning car, fully backed by Toto. There was so much criticism on him, especially the middle part of last season, and the way that he silenced everyone was just beautiful. And I think to be able to beat Russell. No, he had a bit of a lull in that race, and a seven-time world champion, and Charles Leclerc, who is such a he's easily one of the most talented drivers on the grid, to be able to beat such high class drivers in his second season. Beautiful.
Yeah, it was a really strong issue from the team. A few issues with the hydraulics, but they seem to be able to get on top of it a lot quicker than others. And none as bad as McLaren, but again, I think this is down to Mercedes being a bit reluctant to share information about that engine. Could also hint at future issues, though equally Alpine didn't seem to have too many problems. Operationally, though, still as solid as ever. And I think, yeah, what you said about Kimi being very confidence-based, Jenny, it rings true. If you look at just how unflappable he was through that early section of the race, where he was just sort of pushing his way through, getting away from the field, scrapping behind him, not letting that pressure get to him, and then just running his own race. And we always say this about the drivers that disappear and run their own race. It's that confidence thing, it's that ability to just focus on themselves. And that's the huge defining thing. We saw it with Hamilton, we saw it with Verstappen as well, his ability to just put the race that's going on around him behind him and just focus on himself. And I think this is the first time we've really seen Kimi be able to lean into that and just focus on his race. And even when he had that sort of moment in the final few laps where he saw him have that lock up at the end of that back straight, and I remember it was Bono saying afterwards, he was like, that was a bit of a heart in the mouth moment where he realized we were stretching those tires a long way to the end. But Kimi was able to again refocus, adjust the braking distance, adjust that braking bias just to bring it back under control, stay focused, and then give it his all for that final lap, even though he knew he had Russell really trying to chase him down in that final moment. Just kept it calm, recomposed himself, and drove it to the end. And obviously, that lovely bit of showboating coming out of the chicane on that final lap, where he just sort of kicks the arse out of it, knows he can catch it, slide it a little bit for a sort of fan showcase, and then ping it off to the finish line. I was like, oh, yeah, love that. A little bit of Italian flair for it. Equally, George's recovery scrap, shrugging off those Ferraris, breaks away from them, and again does that same thing, finds his rhythm, finds his pace, finds his lap on that circuit, and just starts punching it in, leaving them to sort of fight amongst themselves. There's really not a lot to say about Mercedes because it's an unimpeachable sort of result from their race weekend. They came in, scored as many points as reasonably possible, caused no damage to their cars, learned a little bit along the way, and left. You know, operationally, can't fault it, and that's exactly what I think we'll be looking at them to try and repeat. And interestingly, for the first time in quite some time, I think that's something we can say about Ferrari as well. Hamilton qualified third, finished third in the Grand Prix. Leclerc qualified fourth, finished fourth in the Grand Prix. And on the forefront of it, those statistics don't sound particularly exciting, but they figured out how to have a good race weekend. Their strategy was a lot clearer. They're communicating with the drivers and they respond to the race as it unfolds, as opposed to just blindly following plan X or whatever they get to in the alphabet. They had a plan, they modified it to work with the race as it unfolded. They pulled off a solid double stack and everyone came away genuinely happy. Even a P4 for Leclerc. He was beaming afterwards with that. And the title battle trundles on. They do need to stop Mercedes 1-2 soon if they're going to try and keep a grip on this championship as an idea. But for Ferrari to come away from a race weekend, having operated at that level, we haven't said that since.
A while. It's been a while, and I think
you ain't heard about Moto Casino. Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
You know, regardless of if they keep Mercedes honest or not, with how the teams behind them are doing, he too is theirs already in a lot of ways. You look at the gap between P2 and P3 points-wise of the constructors already, and you go, how have you managed that in two races and a sprint? But that kind of theme of going, continues with Lewis, because he loves China. He broke his own record of podiums achieved in China, going from 9 to 10, and then also created a new record in the process by becoming the first driver to score a podium with McLaren, Mercedes, and Ferrari. You know, we talked, I think, last week about records we didn't kind of know existed, that he was adjusting accordingly, and he just is following through with that. Also, his first podium with Ferrari following the P2 in the sprint, meaning he's somehow already in his time with Ferrari, technically finished in all three podium places in China, which is impressive. And yeah, you say that P3 and P4 on the paper, piece of paper, doesn't look all that impressive, but you wouldn't have been watching his overtakes. We were talking about it earlier, Jenny, in the sprint, carried over into the Grand Prix. It was just such a joy to watch such close wheel-to-wheel action. And he was coming on the radio afterwards, the player, saying, you know what, that was actually quite fun. Because he was complaining a little bit in the sprint, going, what's he up to? What's going on? And saying sentences that could easily be taken out of context and already have been and are quite amusing. And I'm not going to fall into that trap. But he seemed to enjoy it much more in the Grand Prix. And like Mercedes executed, like you say, as perfect a weekend as they were going to have, really. And I like that they are just kind of getting on with their own program. We've seen that with teams further down the order. They know what they're doing. It doesn't always go to plan, but they're not dissatisfied. They're going, okay, this is the best we could have gotten this weekend, and we can live with that. It's refreshing.
That was one of my favorite radio messages ever. It's just so nice to hear. And it's like what we were saying before. And Fred Vasseur said it as well. You can trust them to your drivers because they are so on top of their game. And you don't have to... There was times I was like, they're not getting through sector one like that. They're not going to do it. And they did. And it just... I love racing. We all love racing. That was just... I can't remember recently, like we said, cars following and just enjoying a battle like that. I really loved it.
I think the last time we had something like that would have been the start of the last regulations in 22, when you saw Leclerc and Verstappen going at each other for the first two races in Bahrain and Saudi. You know, you had them switching back a lot of the time, particularly in Bahrain, but it's been a while since then. So it's nice to be able to enjoy that feeling again, like you say, Jenny.
And sort of Ferrari just operationally being at the top of their game as well. Probably would have been the last time that we heard the Italian and the German national anthem played together, dare I say. And obviously something that also came back this weekend, but obviously in reversed order. But yeah, it's just a weekend for going back to...
We'll take it how we can get it.
Yeah, a weekend of going back to 2004, I suppose. Yeah, meanwhile, McLaren in 2004, don't they were particularly hot money, and they certainly weren't again this weekend either. Piastri qualified fifth, but would not take the race start. He at least made it to the grid, though. Norris would qualify sixth, and also did not start.
Piastri, we're talking about Hamilton bringing back stats and creating new ones. Piastri unlocking or kind of getting an old one and dusting it off and going, I don't like that I have this, but whilst I'm here, I might as well take it. The last time a McLaren driver had a double DNS was Bruce McLaren in 1969 at the US Grand Prix in Watkins Glen and the Mexican Grand Prix at the end of the season. Not the stats you want to be reviving. I have nothing else to say about it other than the slight gripe I'll have with something that Jess is going to pick up on, which technically Oscar is in the championship because he did score points in the sprint. But in terms of a Grand Prix, yeah, no, he's yet to even do any laps in them, which is astounding. Considering, what was it, the year before last, he completed every single lap in the season, and he's now gone, let me see if I can do the other way around. And we're like, please no, Oscar, that's not what we want. We don't want you to hold that record.
I completely forgot that we had the sprint race and that Piastri had scored points in that. I was
understandable.
Like, off the top of my head, I was like, wait, hang on, this means he's still not actually classifiable. It was the same sort of thing that befell Alonso, I think, last year or the year before, where the fact that it took like two race weekends before he actually got classified even in the championship because he just hadn't competed in a race yet. So, yeah, I do take that back from my notes. But I think if McLaren can get the car running solidly, they are genuinely at risk of having to battle Alpine and Haas around here. And they just haven't had the running or the data gathering that the others have as well. And that's going to be a huge issue. And you look at the fact that the other teams have made such a huge jump from how they were able to race in Melbourne, which was for the first 15 to 20 laps of the Grand Prix, through to China, where they're now able to race all the way to the end. The tyres last, the battery lasts, the charge lasts. McLaren doesn't know how to make that work. So they're going to have to treat Suzuka as another data gathering round. And they're going to be down on this information compared to the other teams. And they're only, as it stands, a point ahead of Olli Behrmann, who, if you consider him a constructor of himself, is still technically fourth, because obviously Ocon, pointless. But yeah, and given the fact that Alpine seem to be getting on well with their engines, there's hope yet, but it's going to be an uphill battle for the Woking outfit.
No, it's horrible to see. I'm a McLaren fan. I hate seeing it, but it's like you said, even if they did start, they wouldn't have been anywhere close to the Mercedes, the Ferrari. And I actually thought that the Red Bull looked quicker than them as well, if they could finish.
Well, if we're measuring this by just making it into the race, not necessarily even finishing it, then even Aston Martin were ahead of them this weekend because they got a first win of the Grand Prix, which is a baffling sentence to say 2 weeks in, and having watched both of the races. But I don't know if we've had this from one year to another with a regulation change where the previous driver and constructors champion have had such a fall immediately, regardless of what the recovery would be later. You know, that initial gap, you know, we had a double DNF for Red Bull in Bahrain in 22, which was then followed by Max's DNF in Australia. But they, as we can remember, bounced back pretty well. But McLaren, a little bit like Oscar, going for this unwanted record of most DNSs in a row for McLaren at the very least, never mind any other pop teams, is sort of not what we want them to be trying to do. We'd rather they just got in the mix because, you know, if we're having this much fun with Mercedes and Ferrari, how much fun would it be if we could get the McLarens and the Red Bulls and, dare I say, the Haases in there? But that's probably something for the second half of the season at the rate that this is going at the earliest, because I don't know if we can get it sorted between now and definitely not Japan, I'd say. I'll be amazed.
Yeah, I mean, the only advantage they now have is, well, obviously they're going to be down two rounds of data when it comes to Bahrain and Saudi, McLaren will be, but they've at least now got an additional month to look at the limited data they do have and try and figure out what on earth they're doing by the time they rock up in Miami. And again, Miami has been famously quite a decent round for the team on previous years. Obviously, we saw Norris's first win there. We saw them looking pretty solid last year. I think it's going to be a turned table for them this year. And I think we could have good...
But it's also the problem we have, though, with both Japan and Miami, that we had a risk of in Australia, less over China, is that both of those Grand Prix have been wet in the past. And if we get a wet Grand Prix, great fun for us, but we haven't seen this regulation set in wet races yet. So be challenging enough for the teams that are doing well, never mind for the teams that aren't doing well. Because, yeah, you have some data, but you might not be able to use that the way you want to for dry races then. And you'll go, ah, this is potentially problematic.
Further still, the battery deployment is still a bit snappy, even in the dry. So let alone what it's going to be like when we add in wet conditions. So we'll see how that pans out. I don't know if we've got any more to talk about McLaren. I think they're going to be one of the sort of easier to kick on teams.
I'm amazed we got this much, to be honest. So,
yeah.
From this weekend.
I mean, flip side for Haas, Ollie Bearman qualified 10th, finished 5th. Esteban Ocon qualified 13th and finished 14th, which on the face of it, not great. He was looking a lot better through the weekend. Disappointed in Ocon, really shown up by Bearman, I think. And yeah, was quite quiet for much of it, but all earned a solid P5 off the back of his efforts, I think. I'll say more on Ocon when we get to winners and spinners, but I think Bearman is ready for that top seat. The problem is he's got that Ferrari are looking good at the moment, so Lewis might stick around for another season or two, blocking that seat off. But at the same time, I doubt Haas are going to be looking to get a shot of him, so he can stick around, just sort of nipping at their heels consistently. And all in, the team's running of the weekend looks really solid as well. One of the huge things I keep sort of going back to, we see it every time we have these regulations changes, is how quickly as a team you can learn this, build up to this, get settled with this. And Haas have been pretty quick at actually picking up the ball and getting a move on.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Cachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Cachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Cachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
I think that says a lot about how Ayokomatsu's steering it as well, getting them organized as a unit, getting them enthused for each weekend, and getting them to operate as a unit.
I'll say as well, I think not just to keep Henry happy, our Ash chap in residence, expert and all good things Has, but if Has keep on this trajectory, Behrman might not want to leave because he'll be on a really nice journey with Hass's. Maybe they make it to a position where they can finally fight for podiums and dare I even say a race wins. But yeah, brilliant performance by him. A bit like Mercedes, just turned up, did his job incredibly well, left again, no notes. I suspect Jenny's favourite part of the Grand Prix, outside of the fight at the top, will be the Alpine-Hass four-way battle that we had for a good few laps that looked at so many points like it was going to end in tears, but somehow didn't.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really saw Alpine and Haas potentially fighting for podiums this year. I think, like you said, all we really need is a wet race or a Mercedes or a Ferrari not to finish, and they're well up there. And both... I was going to say both Hash drivers then. I didn't mean that. I meant two of them at least, a solid out of the four. We'll get on to Gasly later, but the way that Behrman's driving is just, is barely any mistakes. He is so clean. Oh, I loved it. I liked it when Lindblad was in that fight as well. There was just cars everywhere.
You had Lindblad involved, you had Max hanging behind going, oh, Christ, I've got to get through these four now. How do I do that? Because none of them, they've all got gripes with him as well in some way, shape or form, aside from maybe Behrman, but he's at the front of the pack at that point, so he's the least of the issues, but he's still going to fight him hard when he gets there. You throw Lindblad into the mix as well, and he goes, well, I didn't exactly have an easy time with him in Australia. Oh, this is going to be a bit of a slog. And I don't know if he would have been chuffed that his car conked out after that, going, okay, well, at least I don't have to put up with too much of that for the rest of the Grand Prix, but... yeah, delicious battle. More of the Ocon v Gasly. We like to see that. And then Colapinto, he's still a bit of an unknown that we can talk about him a bit more later. But because he's been consistently at the back, not doing much of anything, no one really knows what to expect from him. It turns out he's a bit of an elbows out sort of driver. And I kind of want to see what happens when he comes up against someone like Perez or Lawson in the future and see how well that goes.
Because famously, when certainly even Lawson and Perez clash, it's always very exciting. So they're quite elbows out.
Kind of my point there, yeah.
Yeah, what happens when we put sort of another elbows out driver into that mix? Be very interesting to see. But no, Haas performing really nicely. And it's interesting, we obviously mentioned there, Max having to sort of almost battle past them at points, but never quite having the car under him to do so. Qualified eighth, would go on to DNF. The Ford engine problems still ringing a bit true, because obviously we saw Hajar retiring with similar looking issues in Australia. Meanwhile, Hajar qualified ninth, so still able to extract the same qualifying pace as Verstappen, but would finish eighth, so not doing too badly there. But also you've got to consider that essentially the two McLarens that were supposed to be ahead of him did not even take to the race start. Is this really a strong result for Hajar? I think the bigger question, though, is could Max pack it in this season? He doesn't like this style of racing. He's been incredibly vocal about it. The car isn't underneath him. He's got a teammate who can seemingly challenge him for that pace. And he wants to race more authentically and has this burgeoning pathway into sports cars and an endurance series. If Red Bull can't offer him a competitive slot in Formula One, he might look elsewhere and not at other F1 teams. He's a savvy racer, and I doubt he'll struggle to find an option elsewhere, and it's not like he's short for cash. I think the guy's on about 70 million euros at the moment, so I think he can take his paycheck and go and enjoy a bit of sports cars.
I don't think he will leave at the end of the season. I think he'll see out the contract, which is good until the end of 28, I think. But if he also did leave, he's got nothing left to prove. He had nothing left to prove last year and came back and had possibly his best year despite not winning the championship. You know, he all but did it, and in a lot of people's eyes did, because of how close it came. So no one could fault him if he did. Quite funnily enough, as it happens, if he said this year that he isn't going to win a Grand Prix, you might believe him. Whereas last year when he said that, no one believed him for a moment, especially as he then went and won in Japan pretty much immediately, and everyone was like, this is why we don't believe you. But it looks a bit of a trickier situation this year. And you've not got an invalid point on Clarence being ahead of the Red Bulls and Woods, Hadjar, Raw, Verstappen, had he stayed in, got as good a result as they were potentially on for. I still think they might have. I still think Hadjar would have got points. McLaren was beatable last weekend. It was just a case of running out of laps to get Norris from Verstappen. But either way, you've still got to be in it to win it. We saw that with other teams further down the order this time. You've got to take the opportunities where they get there. So points on the board for him. Good recovery from Verstappen. Up until the car conked out, it wasn't anything he did. So you can be glass half empty, I'll be glass half full, and say there's a bit of both going on there.
Well, no, I'm not saying that they should have gotten past the McLarens. What I'm saying is the McLarens didn't even start the race. Best case scenario, Hadjar should have been mathematically finishing P7, but he's not got the car, doesn't have the pace to even compete with the drivers that came past him. We've got to look at, it's going to be the Haas of Ollie Bearman, really, and who else started behind him that finished ahead of him. It's this case we always used to use with the F3 drivers, where we'd say, look at how many places they made up. And I go, yeah, because they wiped out half the field at the front. Of course they made up 15 places in a race. If the drivers aren't even taking to the start, you've made up two places already. And yeah, this looks great mathematically for Hadjar. Oh, look, I've made up a place in the Grand Prix. Don't get too angry with me. But you didn't. You've technically lost a place here. And where's the pace? Is it the car? Is it you? I think at the moment he can hide behind the fact that it's a terrible car. And I think his teammate...
I think he needs to hide behind it. We know what he's capable of. So yeah. I'm going to say firmly it is the car.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think it's something to bear in mind. When you see those sort of retirements happening in a race, you have to sort of carry it forward a little bit and think a little bit critically. But I won't apply that same logic to Ollie Bearman, who of course made up a lot of places and did also have cars ahead of him retire. But anyway, the point's point. Jenny, points on Red Bull?
It's just a bit sad to watch, isn't it? I think I loved watching Verstappen get through again. I found it very shocking that he got stuck behind that battle. It just looks like they have no pace, but I didn't see that in Australia. I thought they looked pretty comfortably third fastest in Australia. Hadjar qualified third, didn't he? Behind. They had the pace. I don't know what happened this weekend, but it just, I don't know, maybe it's not, China's not a Red Bull track, but it was horrible to watch. And all of his comments, absolutely miserable. And I'm with you. I'd be completely surprised if he went, no, I've got enough money, I've got a family, I'm doing this because I enjoy it sort of thing. And it's very clear that it's not enjoyable for him at all. I even sort of think if he was to win one, I don't think that would give him much more positivity. I think he
is it in a crazy race situation, let's say, it wouldn't do as good a job of convincing him to stay as it would if he, you know, was just able to beat everyone else outright. Even then, if he did that, you go, is that enough? At what point does it come and all the rest of it? But it gives us something to talk about later down the line when we potentially have less to talk about, such as in a four-week break between Japan and Miami.
I think for... I was going somewhere with this. I think for Verstappen, it's a very interesting one because, or certainly for Red Bull, it's interesting because Australia, everyone had this sort of same thing of, we don't know how to charge the cars up over a race distance. We don't know how to deploy the battery over a race distance. Red Bull have got all their electrical equipment from Ford. I joke that it's the sort of the Ford wet belt engine going pop because Ford are famously bad at making road car engines at the moment. But Red Bull make the petrol powered engine and it's Ford supplying the electrics. Ford obviously haven't got a proper handle on it. Over a lap, they're fine. They can do the sort of warm-up laps, the boost laps, the build-up laps to it that charges the battery unit, that builds that sort of MGUK element to it, and then deploy it over a lap. Obviously, the chassis still needs a lot of work because they can't get that speed out of it over a lap at China. But in Australia, where it's a slightly shorter, slightly easier sort of circuit to deploy technically, they were able to sort of show a bit of that pace. But all the other teams have now learned how to use that electrical system, and Red Bull just hasn't. They haven't got that information coming to them from Ford. They haven't got an electrical unit that either its manufacturer or they understand. And that's why we're seeing them struggle on the outright pace as well. I think that's the other half of it. It's both a bad car mechanically, it doesn't handle well, it does not steer, it doesn't turn in, it doesn't brake right, but also electrically speaking, the advantage that Mercedes has is they understand the electrics. The advantage Ferrari has, they've got the right turbocharger set up. Red Bull is suffering on three different fronts here, and that's where...
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
They're also starting to fall apart. And circuits that are a bit more like Albert Park might help them mask it. They might be more Red Bull circuits. But I fear there's not going to be a lot of those on the calendar this year. And circuits with big, long straights, with sort of huge power demands, things like Monza, things like the back straight at Miami, things like Canada, where you've got that long double straight section and a really fast back section into Canada as well. Even Silverstone, these are circuits that are really going to expose the Red Bull for being a bit useless this year. And, I mean, we get to Miami and Canada a lot sooner than most others. They're going to be huge problem circuits. I reckon the Red Bull will look good around the Red Bull ring because it's short, it's tight, it's complex. It gives them a chance to constantly be charging, getting onto the brakes, regenning through the corners and deploying it through that sort of start-finish straight in the run-up to turn three. But everywhere else, they're going to really struggle. Singapore might be, this might be the first time we finally see Max Verstappen actually do good in Singapore, because it's a lot of heavy braking zones. It's a lot of chance for it to keep building up that energy and boost. We're going to see an inverted Red Bull.
You know, I'd genuinely forgotten that Austria was on the calendar for a moment there, and I just thought, if Mercedes and Ferrari are at the pace they're at, and if the other teams further down the pecking order are not improving as quickly as they might like to be, we already saw cars outside of the top four lapping backmarkers, for lack of a better word, once. How many times could you lap certain cars around the Red Bull ring, considering how short that lap is and how many overtakes you could get in? It took time. If you've got a couple of straights, you've got a lot of corners, but they're all places where you can overtake already. What are you going to do in this situation? I'm getting distracted, but that's just a fun thought.
I reckon Red Bull ring, we could see a Toro Rosso lap a Red Bull. I might even lay that down as my wild prediction for the Grand Prix now. I'm going to find
out. They've switched Lindblad and Verstappen around by then.
Just so Verstappen gets a competitive race. Where is Austria? Here we go. Jesse, wild prediction. A Toro Rosso laps a Red Bull. I'm writing that in now. Speaking of Toro Rosso, Lawson, or Racing Bulls rather, Lawson qualifies 14. We're going back to 2004. We've had it with the Italian and the German national anthem. Lawson qualifies 14th, finishes 7th, and Lindblad qualifies 15th and finishes 12th. And they're tied on points with the big boys as well. Both drivers looking quite at home in the car. It looks easier to tame than its sibling. If Verstappen and Hadjar are still struggling to get pace from the car, as I've already alluded to, we might see occasions of Lawson and Lindblad consistently beating them over a weekend. And both are very much willing, again, something we've also already alluded to, both are willing to race the others. And the consensus from inside the factories as well, this is my useful tip, is it's just that Red Bull are a long way off the pace from where they thought they'd be, and they're not happy about it. The Racing Bulls guys, very happy about what they've built, and they know that they can take it further. The brain drain from Milton Keynes is significant. We saw, certainly in the last two seasons, a lot of people leaving Red Bull. There are rumours that many of them have gone to Aston Martin, but it seems that's also kind of unfounded, given how bad they're doing.
Yeah, Lawson was the highest scoring Red Bull driver this weekend, which I thought was just rather poetic and delicious and perfectly fitting given the events post-China last year. You couldn't write it if you tried. Points in the sprint race too. Put some, like you say, on level points with Verstappen in the Drivers' Championship. You, as much as I know you don't like seeing Red Bull in this position, Jenny, you've got to take a little bit of satisfaction out of the deliciousness of that situation. Lindblad, yeah, learning weekend for him. Most of the issues did feel out of his control, so nothing really to say bad against him. I think he bought himself a lot of capital in Australia as well, so even if some mistakes had crept in on his side this weekend, you'd have forgiven him for it. So sitting pretty, I think, is the best way to describe Racing Bull's two rounds into this season.
It just looks like a much easier car to drive as well. They're not fighting the wheel as much. The Red Bull handful, like we've already said. But Lawson's doing quite well this season, isn't he? He's a lot, well, this race, Australia, not so much. But he's already doing, he looks like he could be like a good team leader. He's the longest serving. Lindblad's still learning. And I do think Lindblad will come good. I said last time I was on the podcast, I think he could have done with another year in F2. I still sort of stand by that. I think these things will iron out. He's not got Helmut Marko breathing down his neck. But I don't know. Lindblad for me is a bit, he can be a bit inconsistent, a bit rocky, but he's so quick. And he still showed that this weekend. So good for him.
I feel like Lindblad is a bit like Antonelli last year. We know he's capable, but it's going to maybe take a bit of time for the rawness to be ironed out into a bit more control with what he does with that speed. But when he gets there, oh boy, we're going to be in for quite something, I think.
And I think Mercedes have proven with Antonelli that, yes, you can drag someone up very early, but you do have to basically be willing to almost sacrifice a season to coach them through it and properly get them into it and give them that time and that space. We saw,
and in theory, Racing Bulls is the team to do that rather than Mercedes.
That's
so
actually what it's supposed to be there for. But also we saw a similar, we saw the same approach, obviously sort of exaggerated a bit through Drive to Survive when it came to Bortoletto and the way that Sauber sort of took him in and said, welcome from Formula 2, you've got here very quickly. Here's a season. We're not going to berate you when things go wrong. We're here to pick you up, build you up, and make you better. This is the whole idea of being a team. And I think maybe Red Bull, under its new stewardship, might have a bit more of that approach, and that might offer Lindblad that chance. He's doing very well so far, and I think he's matured, certainly the way that he presents himself, talks, approaches his weekends. He's matured hugely from Formula 2 over the winter, and that was one of the stark contrasts I found with him coming into Australia. I was like, that's just a well-formed gentleman who might be in this for 3 years already, functioning by the way he talks, the way he addresses people, the way he has this confidence about himself that's not unfounded or over-egged either. It's not this bullshiness. It's just this I'm supposed to be here mentality that really works. And it's nice to think that Red Bull actually might finally support this and try and make this progress work. And I think the same could be said for Hajar. They know they've moved him up to the big team. They've unwittingly served him a bit of a pig of a chassis, possibly more so than what they ended up chucking Tsunoda at last year, or Lawson at, certainly at the start of last year as well. And they've gone, right, it's not going to be easy. Do your best. And I think we're going to see a better Red Bull for it as well. I think this is going to be one of the huge things where at the end of the year, we'll look back and go, Laurent Mekies, thank you. You haven't produced a great deal of results because the car was terrible, but at least you haven't actually like broken four people's lives around this. So, well done.
Watch Red Bull win in Japan now and just poo-poo all of your statements about this.
I don't know. I mean, they've got to get past Alpine first. Gasly qualified 7th, finished 6th, and Colapinto qualified 12th and finished 10th. Reasonably speaking, I'm going to say Alpine at the moment are about the 4th fastest team. I haven't quite figured out who's 3rd yet, whether it's Haas, whether it's McLaren, whether it's Red Bull. It's sort of a bit up in the air. Neither have really had a clear enough weekend to put that data together.
I will say to you, to be first, you have to finish. So Haas, not McLaren.
Yeah, but anyway, Alpine are certainly looking spicy, and Gasly isn't one of the top drivers on the grid, but his one-lap pace consistently there, as we've seen so far, and his race form really isn't terrible. Colapinto, though, far stronger weekend than he's previously had, and he got unlucky in qualifying, bear in mind, with that Audi going off, throwing the yellow flags. hampered him a little bit, didn't get a proper run at things. But his starts are incredible. Naturally, Melbourne, a stunner. But if you watch his spatial awareness coming off the line for the Grand Prix in China, the way that he finds the space, he finds the grip, he finds the guy he's racing next to and pushes it and makes that race happen very early on cold tyres where everyone else is struggling for grip and boost and electricity. And he gets in and gets his elbows out very early and very cleanly as well, it has to be said. It's making strong progress off the line at the start of a weekend. I think that's, for people that are paying attention, it doesn't go unnoticed, I'd like to say.
He did fight tooth and nail during the race to hold on to P10. He thought about P9, but Carlos was not having any of that. And he really needed that first point, because it is his first point with the team since he joined them at the start of last year, and it's the first time he scored points since Austin 2024 with Williams. So he really needed that, and he's had opportunities at a limited number of other occasions to get it, and it hasn't happened for him. So hopefully it's a sign of him turning a little bit of a corner in terms of he, I want to say, because I don't have a better way of saying it, suffers a little bit from what Lando used to suffer from and potentially still does, in terms of he talked the talk but didn't have the walk to back it up for a long time, and now he's showing a bit of potential to back up maybe what he's saying, which he needs if he's going to stick around. Double points over Gasly across the sprint in Grand Prix. Didn't have that on my bingo card, but should hopefully shut up Flavio for 5 minutes. I'm still thinking about the Drive to Survive episode, which I would like to erase from my mind. Last time an Alpine driver achieved back-to-back points results, because obviously Gasly did this in Australia as well, it was also Gasly back in 2024 in Qatar and Abu Dhabi. So I don't know what more Flavio wants from him generally, because he just seems to always be angry. And you go, the guy is doing the best he can with what you are giving him. Again, maybe channel, you need to channel the kind of Christian Horner from Drive to Survive and go, maybe just change your car. Because the guy's doing the best he can here, and I feel like you're not being particularly grateful for it.
One of the most well-rounded drivers on the grid. I think if I was Cadillac, me, just in this example, coming into the sport, I'd love to have a Gasly. I think he's such an asset, and it's nice to see Colo Pinto, when he came up from when he was in Williams, we were all looking at him and we were like, oh, we were very impressed. Lives. And it's nice to see hints of that again, because you do see these flashes of talent from Colo Pinto. He didn't last year, but that Williams season, he really impressed me, apart from his crashes and stuff. Maybe he's just one of them where we're talking again, he just needs a bit of time to wire out.
I think also that Williams season, it was quite easy to come in and look good considering what he was replacing. It was sort of a case of just sort of anything at this point. He did then go and completely ruin it by binning it like 8 times across the Brazil Grand Prix weekend, which is quite an impressive feat. But regardless, yeah, he's... Maybe there's something to be said for the fact that he was pulled from Formula 2 quite early. There is something that someone spotted and figured, give him time, iron it out, maybe we'll get this result. He could just be one of those drivers you go... Okay, yeah, not the worst all of a sudden, but we'll, I don't think he's going to...
Do you think it's like Jenny's point with Lindblad, though? He wouldn't have suffered from another season in F2. And we've not, you know, with Antonelli, he was on the podium in his debut season. He was in the top 10 regularly. He, you know, did well. He didn't just trundle around midfield and nearly get points here and there. Whereas, and I know we can't expect that from someone like Colo Pinto and Lando, because you're not in a top car. Mercedes last year was also not a top car. But you need to see those flashes more often. And as Jenny said, you didn't see any last year. And when you're bringing him in to replace someone that was not given a fair take of the stick, you want to have that justified to you to understand it. And it's not until a regulation change. And we go back to your argument earlier about you had a number of cars ahead of you not finishing, so you automatically move up as a result. It leaves us still a little bit of bitter taste in our mouth. It's good, and we could see some potential, but we need that in a more neutral setting where it's purely on merit rather than being able to take advantage of opportunities that come your way. So it's, again, a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
I will say, though, on the argument of giving Colapinto another year in Formula 2, he wouldn't have made it to Formula 1 afterwards, though, because the seat would have been filled by someone who would have ultimately finished higher than him in Formula 2. I think there are better, there were and
would that have been drivers. A bad thing?
I don't think it would have been a bad thing. I'm just saying that it's sort of one of those things of it's the talent that then gets stuck in Formula 2, and because there's the lack of seats, because things don't move on from
Formula 1. But if there's 1, better talent, then is it much of better a loss? Talent,
but it might have made its way through, but then we wouldn't have got Franco Colapinto going on his own little adventure around China ahead of the Grand Prix, seemingly sort of flying out
he
of
Boston. He could have still done that.
He could have still done it, but it just wouldn't have been funny if it's a Formula 2 driver just getting lost in China. But when it's Alpine just sort of going, where's Franco? We don't know. He's in the middle of nowhere in China talking about Ronaldo and Messi to random Chinese people who don't speak English and then asking if he can fly to Japan early because he wants to go and see a baby monkey. Like,
I do wonder, though, just to get you back on track a little bit, if we'd had last year's F2 champion in that Alpine this year instead, what would have happened there?
Very different scenario. Remind me who won Formula 2 last year. But yeah. I don't know. It's.
I think that's the one thing that still frustrates me about all this. I'd like Lindblad. I don't have any qualms with him moving up, but when you have drivers like him available to you and can't get anywhere and have to just sort of sit around a la Drugovic and Porcher, it just brings that argument back out again, and you don't have the results to back it, and you try and look for reasons that don't involve folded green bills as to why the driver is in the seat. But we've probably talked enough about our future.
Yeah.
I do like what Bono said after the race about Kimi being a generational talent, and you can see it in quite a lot of the drivers on the grid now, and
he's not a generational talent, but at the same time, he's not the worst driver to ever make it to Formula One, so I don't think it's sort of a zero-sum game in that sense. However, and this is I don't want to be critical about Audi.
You don't have a segue here.
No, I don't really have a segue. There's nothing that really ties me in. We just sort of get to Audi and go, oh, wait, they're here and not doing too badly. Hülkenberg qualified 11th, finished 11th. Bortoleto qualified 16th, wouldn't take the start. But at the same time, the Audi product is sort of doing exactly what we anticipated it would do. It's not perfect, but it's working to produce something really interesting. It's not fallen back that much either from what it was doing last year when it was essentially a Ferrari B team with a terrible paint job. You consider Sauber was
able. He had a great livery. What are you on about?
Sauber was consistently sniping for points with Hülkenberg. Eventually, they got Bortoleto up to speed and they were producing some great points there. But now they're sort of doing a very similar approach with an entirely homebrewed engine and chassis and aerodynamics as we go through a sort of change of rules. This is incredible that they've been able to pull this off so well compared to established teams or ones with better known power units or power units from better known suppliers and manufacturers. This is a huge turnaround. I don't think enough is actually being said that Audi have done really well here. Everyone's just going, oh, it's just Sauber by a different name. No. If anything, they've done more work for this season than Cadillac have, and it's really impressive.
And I think as well, going off what we were talking about with some of the other drivers in there, comments and approaches to this season with the regs, Hülkenberg, to echo the Audi sort of switcheroo and what is the right way of going about things, he has the right approach. You look at how he addressed the weekend, he said it hadn't gone his way, and that's all right. It wasn't the smoothest, but he was focused on the bigger picture, how it's all building towards unlocking the car and the team's potential, and then just ends it all by thanking the mechanics. Nice professional job. Is frustrated, shares that with the fans, but then goes back to, but it's part of the journey. A little bit like how I see Bottas at Cadillac. He goes, yeah, this isn't ideal, but we knew this wasn't going to be an overnight thing. And like you say, it's impressive considering how under the radar the transformation of the team has been, and it's more than just peeling off a sticker and slapping a new one on the car. But they did have good news this weekend because in F1 Academy, Emma Feldmeier scored the team's first podium and then their first win. So she's also championship leader. And it's something we don't always see with F1 Academy as well. You normally see maybe Lewis and George going down to visit, and I think last year you saw Christian Horner on the grid with the Red Bull drivers, but that's about the extent that you would get. Jonathan Wheatley, Bortoletto, and McNeish, and quite frankly, Armada of Audi supporters were down there at the podium watching on both occasions and paying a lot of attention to the race during, as it was unfolding, rather, in the pit lane. It was just nice to see. You don't see such a big group of the F1 team going to watch the support races. So they've got this whole mentality that you were referring to earlier that they showed in the Drive to Survive episode with Bortoletto and the different approach to Alpine that they have in dealing with their new drivers. It isn't just applicable to F1, it applies to the drivers in their academy and in the stable. So I really like that as a whole. So they do have a lot of positive takeaway, even if the Grand Prix itself and F1 didn't go to plan as much as they might have liked it to.
I didn't have any notes on Audi. He went quite under the radar, didn't he? It's like what you guys said.
Yeah, I mean, Hülkenberg was there for the Grand Prix weekend. He took part in it. And it was, yeah, again, close to sort of pinching those points. But it's just nice to see that you can actually have a new team enter and sort of do something with it. Functionally, I think what Audi did was simply buy out Sauber's place on the grid, not necessarily buy out a lot of, like, the technical side of Sauber, because while they've got bits and pieces of it, it's an entirely new set of regulations. They had to start from scratch functionally. They just had the advantage of having sort of a factory and a wind tunnel, which Cadillac didn't, but Cadillac don't have a lot of other things, but they do have supposedly one of the best power units on the grid and are fumbling it. Audi, meanwhile, made their own. It sounds a bit funky compared to everyone else's, and I think there's something quite trick going on there that I'd love to know more about. But yeah, I just like the fact that Audi have come into this and gone, no, we're going to be a Formula One team in its entirety, whereas Cadillac went, could we also have a year before we pick someone from Formula One?
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
Academy as well. You sort of go, oh, it's a bit wet. Whereas Audi have gone, nope, we're doing this. We're committing to it and we're doing it properly. And we'll take
an F3 driver in Slater as well. While we're at it, slap the livery on the car so you know it's definitely Audi for both of them, and we'll support the bejesus out of them.
Yeah, and it's what you want. And I think that's the really exciting thing. And especially, I think it's showing in their results. They're not doing great, but they're not doing worse when you consider the other teams that are on the grid, and certainly two of them that are supposedly very
comfortably ahead of three teams. And yes, two of those you're surprised about.
Yeah. Two of them, compared to where certainly one of them finished last season, and the fact that the amount of brain power and might and existence these other two teams have, you sort of go, fair dues to them. They've not done too badly here. So, well, it's not a great deal of points. We like the spirit of Audi, I think. That's the thing. If we had to give a spirit...
Diving into the regulations, can we apply F1 Academy points to the F1 Championship? Because we've got a lot of those.
That would be a really fun thing to do, to work out. I want to go back and do that to last season's results and see what happens, because I think that...
For the last two seasons, because then, you know, ever since the F1 teams came into Alpine, somebody shoot up a lot in 24. Yeah, very bullying.
Mercedes would have a fun run of things, because obviously with Dorian Powell from last season, and the fact
Ferrari that Ferrari as well, though.
Really close with, Meyer Werk. I might go and do this. Maybe that's something we do in the gap between now and Japan, or in the gap between Japan and Miami. We'll go back and revisit the seasons, adding in F1 Academy points.
I like this idea.
That might also do something for Williams as well, of course, because Leah Block did get on the podium a couple of times, which is something that I don't think Williams are going to do this year. Sainz qualified 17th, finished 9th, so not bad. Albon qualified 18th and would not start. I lost track of what the problem was for him. I didn't see why he didn't start in the end.
I don't recall them saying it just didn't happen for whatever reason. But yeah, awkward for them. But points on the board at least for Sainz and Williams from essentially just being in the mix and surviving, which is not a bad thing to do because it gives you a silver lining. It boosts the team and goes, well, we're in the mix now. We're off to the races. We've got more points than two of the teams on the grid, and it's two big powerhouses on paper, so that looks good for them. And you've got to take advantage of the opportunities when they come your way, because if you go back to the argument you were making earlier about if McLaren were there, if Max was still in the game, you're not getting that P9. Paulo Pinto's not getting that P10. You've still got to be in those positions. And how many times did we say that about Yuki, even last year, and Paulo Pinto? Like, you've at least got to be around the P11, P12, where Hülkenberg is, to, you know, take advantage of these opportunities, and if you fail that, at least be very near to it, so that you've got that argument that, well, it was P11, so it's respectable. Sainz did exactly what he needed to do here, and coming from 17th, even with the retirement, helped himself by overtaking a few people.
Yeah, Sainz looked like he was actually able to race the car a little bit, even if he was sort of racing it while sort of dragging essentially a safe around with him for sort of additional ballast. But yeah, not great for Grove, but I don't know. I think if we're seeing him with a challenging chassis, I think we're going to see more from Sainz than Albon, as we have seen previously.
It's a bit like Albon's gone for lunch with Verstappen over the weekend, isn't it? I've never known him to be so defeated by a car. He's not enjoying it.
Especially after such a short period of time as well. It's only been two races, and it's been happening for the last 5 years.
But no, I think they've got two good drivers that will pick up points for them. Once Albon gets out of his whatever's going on with the car. But no, I think Sainz, that was one of my best drives of the race. I don't think that car was one that will get points many times this season. But like you said, he kept behind faster cars, he kept behind an Alpine. Good job.
Yeah. Perhaps Albon's just a little bit preoccupied with wedding planning. Maybe that's what's on his mind. He'll get married in the summer break, get it off of his plate, and then we'll see him come back really strong in the second half.
He's just doing a step from last year, finish consistently in the top five for every race after the summer break.
Yeah, he's just thinking about like flower arrangements and colours and things for waistcoats, and it's just too much to deal with at the moment. He'll get it cleared, move on to the next thing. Problem is, he knows he's got to live up to what Charles pulled off, so he's got to sort of figure out something there. Meanwhile, two drivers who don't really seem to have that sort of an issue and are just simply battling an absolutely terrible car. Cadillac, Bottas qualified 20th and finished 13th. Meanwhile, Perez qualified 22nd and finished 15th. So they made it to the end, but I think the bodywork failing on Perez's car was very odd, and it suggests that their carbon fibre builds aren't great. So they've either scrimped on the structure for it, that's supposed to be the sort of the supportive ribbing that holds it out to save weight, because the car is potentially getting a bit hefty, or it could just be a bit of a failure that it's a bad cure. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it just sort of doesn't go right. You don't get the penetration of the glue all the way through the carbon fibers. If it's repeated issues, there could be a bit of an underlying problem, though. Pace, very much still an issue. That Ferrari power unit in the Haas is working really nicely, as is the one in the factory outfit, so I don't know what's going on with that Cadillac. And like I said, could be weight, could be aero, could be both of them. That's on Cadillac to sort out, unfortunately.
I'm just happy they both made it to the end of the race. I'm less happy about the fact that this week Perez also decided to drive into Bottas, which was somehow both better and worse than clashing with Lawson, then spun himself around to kind of complete the manoeuvre. Both were then lapped by Gasly, which I really didn't have on my bingo card for this year. So I am both glass half full and half empty after that one, but they made it to the end of the race, which is more than we can say for a certain other team that we'll get to in a minute.
Have you got notes for Cadillac, or were they just simply so absent that there was nothing to say?
Yeah. Good job on finishing.
Well done. You
good finish. Start.
Participation trophy coming to you from Jenny Craig.
That's the one.
It's maybe they'll sort of finish on the lead lap at some point this season. Maybe that's the next step for them.
I'm not looking at Cadillac, but I've thought of a silver lining for Aston Martin because, you know, Alonso qualifies 19th, DNF, Stroll qualifies 21st, which I find hilarious because it was still between the two Cadillacs, also DNFs. They did make it further last week, but they also made it further than McLaren because at least they DNF'd and didn't DNS. So that's something. And, you know, after what we saw from Sauber in 24 and Alpine a little bit last year, I didn't think we'd have to find new ways to talk about teams just so we'd have something to say about them because of how not great they were doing. But this is going to be the challenge we're going to have this year. And that's about the extent that I can manage for this episode.
Welcome to the Plumbing New Depths chapter of the podcast. Alonso
qualifies... Channel 5 section, if you will.
Yeah, Alonso qualifies 19th and would DNF in the 200-mile-an-hour vibrator. Meanwhile, Stroll qualified 21st and would DNF. Yeah, Stroll out with a battery issue, which is very much a Honda thing that they have said they're working on. But again, it's Honda's home race next weekend, into the next race weekend. So not looking good for them. Alonso, meanwhile, having to retire because he was losing feeling in his hands due to the vibrations. Essentially, this car is so bad, it will give you nerve damage. At least the F14T, the Ferrari, didn't actually like physically harm him in any way. It was just a bad car to drive. But this one seems like dead set on actually trying to injure the guy.
Especially awkward as well, considering the success of which there was much that Honda had specifically in IndyCar with a 1-2-3 spoilers finish over there. It sort of, I didn't think there was a way to add insult to genuine injury, but there was.
Yeah, maybe that's where they've been channeling all of Lawrence Stroll's money, is they've gone, we've got all this money, what are we going to do with it? And then sort of they went, we need to build an engine for IndyCar. Okay. We'll pay this back to ourselves later. And what they're doing is they're waiting until they've saved up all their winnings from IndyCar, and then all of a sudden the F1 car is going to get good. It's going to go like that. I think they're going to pay themselves back eventually, which I can attest is not a very smart financial route to take. But anyway, but if you watch back Alonso's onboard at the start, you can see that car vibrating as all hell. Go back to any of the other cars, even as they're
building. He's just excited to get the race going. That's not the car. That's just him just buzzing to be in Formula One.
A lot of Red Bulls.
He's a rookie driver. He's just happy to be there.
Yeah. But if you look at the other cars, they're not, even at the start where it's that sort of like boost building blue light period before the five main lights come on, none of the other cars are vibrating like that. They're all just sort of sat there just like, okay. We haven't made our engine mounts out of like concrete, I suppose. I mean, while Alonso
is going, it does feel like something that came out of an episode of Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, it's just trying to shake the poor man to death. I don't even know if they'll be able to complete the race in Japan, and they've got 2 weeks to figure that out.
Another silver lining, though, is that technically Alonso's Aston Martin didn't fail; it was Alonso. So maybe if he did have loads of Red Bulls for Japan, and then maybe the shaking had counteracted the vibrations, then he could finish.
I like your thinking.
Yeah.
So if he has like the coffee jitters before the race, and then hope the car sort of is like in alternate vibrate, and
he needs to do sort of a flash thing and just vibrate at a different frequency himself to just be at one with the car, and then he's the ultimate racing driver again.
I don't have hopes for it. Because equally, I think Stroll got lucky that the battery pack gave out before he did. Because also, we said at the start of the season, the guy still got nerve damage in his hands when he fell off a bicycle. This must be grueling for him.
This was a long-term plan from him, for him to get used to that pain, so that when 26 came around, he would be better equipped to deal with it.
No, I figured out what it is. You know what's like the hot thing to buy for like fitness and well-being at the moment? It's those vibrating pads that you stand on. This is just a long-term fitness game for both of them. You just sort of stand there and be fitter because you're vibrated. It's like the jiggle pads.
I'd love to see them in that advert.
He doesn't have time to go to physio, so he drives the Aston Martin.
Yeah, the AMR26, the 200-mile-an-hour jiggle pad. It just sort of shakes all the sort of excess weight off of you. Maybe they could put the Williams on it and just see if it shakes the weight off the Williams. Just stack them up and send them off. Anyway, winners and spinners. Timo, your winner this week. And I think this is the first time for you possibly picking this driver.
Quite possibly, and also possibly the last time, Pierre Gasly. That performance in an Alpine, you know, I may have given it to him in Brazil in 24, yeah. But it's been a while since then. And yeah, he's dragging that car to places. I don't think it has any right to be yet because we don't have enough data to back it up. So I'm impressed. If you told me 12 months ago that he's going to get that on relative merit, I would be questioning what drugs you're taking. So yeah, no, that's who I've chosen for China. I went a bit less Route 1. Anything wrong with that this weekend.
Yeah, I went very Route 1 for me. It had to be Kimi Antonelli. Absolutely outstanding performance. And I think, yes, he won the race. That's all very easy to appoint him for a winner for that. But I think it's because we've seen that sort of mental step up from him that we've seen that change, that sort of figuring out where his head needs to be for a Grand Prix weekend. And I think that's the really important thing here. Yes, we know the pace has always been in him. He's got to grips with the car pretty quickly. He's got to grips with himself really nicely this season as well. I think for me, that's the big hurdle that he's brilliantly overcome.
I went for Toto Wolff because I think there's nothing better in life than being able to say, I told you so. And that vindication was such an amazing, I told you so. Because we all thought too soon, even for F1, never mind a top car. And look how well. How well, yeah. It's turned.
Yeah, there is no better feeling than I told you so. So that's a left field or clever choice of winner. Meanwhile, spinners, Timo.
Who else? But McLaren couldn't even start the race and dusted off a record from the 1960s. We had definitely all either forgotten about or just downright didn't know. So yeah, no other place for you this weekend.
Yeah, very, very true, very fair. For me, Ocon, your seat's already under threat from basically anyone else. And then you clatter into Colapinto, earn a 10-second penalty. Timo and I were saying in the pre-record that maybe 10 seconds was a bit steep. 5 seconds, just call it a racing incident, but it was a bit clumsy. It wasn't necessary because you were likely going to get past Colapinto when you got to the next straight anyway. Especially when you consider that there are no McLarens or Max in the top 10. That's a certified points haul that you've almost thrown away there. So yeah, not a great weekend for him, as much as I love the guy. Jenny?
I went for Red Bull. I thought there was so much more in there for both of them. And, yeah, the start, DNF, and then whatever went on with Hadjar, it's just, I really didn't see that coming after Australia. I thought they'd be maybe even one of them on the podium, but something went very wrong.
Not yet. Did we have you pick season-long predictions? No. Ah, we missed that one. But a lot of people have put the Red Bulls on the podium this season, which is bold. Yeah.
Didn't feel bold at the time.
No, really didn't. I'm looking at your list, which is longer than mine, and thinking, oh boy, you've might have.
You wait.
However, I will say we're all still doing better than the AI, which failed to predict that Lewis Hamilton would get on the podium. So, yeah, it might be on the money, though, because it has predicted Gasly to get a podium at some point, which is likely, possibly overstretching itself with Alonso and the Williams. But, yeah, we'll figure that out.
You wait. You just wait.
Just you wait, Sunshine.
We're going to get crazy Baku.
Meanwhile, when it comes to a predictions review, the predictions we laid down in the previous episode, 1 point for Henry for the Kimi Antonelli pole position, 1 point to Henry and I for Lewis Hamilton P3, 0 points for fastest lap, 0 points for wildest prediction. And
I'm very much in solidarity with McLaren on the predictions game. I'm also just not starting.
Just refusing to score anything. It's the sensiblest option.
It's all part of the long-term plan.
You're going to come back in the second half of the season once you've figured out what you're doing.
I had you in the first half.
Yeah. Meanwhile, when it comes to Fantasy Formula 1 and the review there for China, Dirschfall Team, 474 points, Sabonius Racing, 447 points, and Jaffa Cake Racing, another P3, let's go boys, 388 points. Blink, 182 kilometres an hour, P6, on the curbs, P11, the worst of all options, P28, alongside MSC. I think we need to make worst of all possible options worse, because we put Antonelli in there, and that's
really...
We did. Yeah, we were running out of bad drivers, and we got to the point where, like, I guess we're going to have to go for, like, Antonelli.
We'll fix that ahead of Japan.
Yeah, we will make that team worse. That is an undercut podcast promise. Overall, Sabonius Racing leads 706 points, Dirschfall Racing 693 points, and Jaffa Cake Racing 598. Come on, lads. On Melancholy Grid P6, on the Curbs P10, the Haaster Plan P13, the worst of all options P29 with 36 points total. So we're still not doing terribly, or we're doing terribly, which was the goal for that team, rather, but we could be doing worse. That's all we've
will.
We will. We that again, a certifiable Undercut Podcast promise. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Undercut Podcast. Remarkably, one we thought was going to be short has taken about an hour and 20 minutes. But we'll be back soon to preview the Japanese Grand Prix. Until then, if people want more from you, Timo, where can you be found?
This week, I have an interview out with Julia Landauer over on the Curbs. I will also have an episode of On the Curbs IndyCar reviewing all the action from Arlington. And there is currently an F1 Academy Shanghai roundup over on the Paddock Chronicle for you all to read. So that's where you can find me this week.
Excellent stuff. And Jenny, in the meantime, if people want more content from the wonderful Jenny Craig, where should they be looking?
Well, normally it would be inside F2, but I think we're going to have to get creative with this 3 months break. So I guess enjoy that one.
Find Jenny somewhere, probably a new
hobby. You can borrow our idea and add the F1 Academy points for the last few seasons onto their respective F2 teams and see if that changes anything for the championship there. And then there's a sort of semi-crossover episode that we can have where we go, this didn't make as much difference as we thought it did, but it was fun while it lasted.
Or we find that Prema were actually good in F1 Academy, but they were not in Formula 2, I think. I don't think they're doing particularly well.
They did a Honda and diverted all their money to the wrong location.
Yeah, spent it all in the wrong place. In the meantime, though, if you want any more from me, you can, of course, pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. That will be out on Wednesday. If you're out and about through this week, I'll be out on a hell of a lot of shoots, and I'll also be up at the NEC for the Classic Car Restoration Show across the Friday and Saturday, so come and say hello to me at that. Otherwise, I'm on the internet as @JesseOnCars on pretty much all the social media platforms. I think that's where I need you to find me. Please don't find me anywhere else, otherwise that'd be a bit alarming. Otherwise, we'll be back soonish with a preview of the Japanese Grand Prix, and Timo and I are going to go tot up some points from Formula One Academy and Formula One to see who's done best over the past 2 years, because I reckon there's an interesting episode there. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.